Where are you parked? Over there? You mind if I join?
So, Logan, and hope you had a nice lunch break. Did I have anything to say in the previous talk? No. Here's our next talk, Victor Lazzarini. He was with us last year already, and at that time he was rather into more DSP programming stuff, if I remember correctly. This year it's about another topic, C-Sound, extending C-Sound 5. Before Victor begins, one information. There was a suggestion from him and Dave Phillips to do a small C-Sound demo today, which was not scheduled, which is not a program. But we managed to get into the program, so after the last talk today, at roughly 5:15, they were doing over here a 20-minute live demo of C-Sound. Okay, then, Victor? Go ahead.
This talk is going to be discussing means of extending C-Sound, which are not, some of it is not particularly new, it's been there ever since the language was introduced, and but some of it is quite new, and some of it is fairly new. What is new is basically that you can develop components of the language, unit generators in the form of opcodes, and load them dynamically. It's something that you couldn't do in the past, but ever since a couple of years ago, you were able to do it. And with the new versions of C-Sound, the new version 5, there'll be a paper on that this afternoon. This is very well supported and encouraged. So, and also another way of extending the language that you're going to be doing is from using the language itself in terms of user-defined codes. And I'll discuss about, I'll mention a few other things that are currently on the loop with this. Okay, so just a little brief idea for those of you who don't know about C-Sound. C-Sound is one of the most popular of the modern music languages. By modern, I mean languages that are generally cross-platform or even portable, and together with C Music, C-Sound was probably one of the first such languages. Can almost like second generation after the Music 5. Sort of four type languages. The C-Sound is greatly available for a majority of platforms. So it's available for lots of systems, and currently very well supported on the major systems: macOS, then Windows and Linux in all flavors. It's basically probably one of the strengths of C-Sound. One of the many strengths of C-Sound is the complete set of unit generators, which in C-Sound take the form of opcodes. It's a very fairly comprehensive set of UGENs. Also, one of the reasons why you have a great number of opcodes is because it's quite easy to extend. It provides a simple opcode structure, coding structure, which makes it quite easy to extend. So, so many people did that, and that's why you have such a large collection of unit generators. And also, we have such a large collection of developers of unit generators around the world. And now it provides, well, ever since a couple of years ago, it's providing a mechanism for loading. Plugging of codes from dynamic library objects, which is something that you find in other popular systems such as PG, which is an important thing to have these days. And I'll just mention the API, basically a control, mostly a control API that you can, which you can use to control CSAL from embed CSAL in other applications, which is a very important development. Probably Jones will be discussing that aspect in his talk. And it's a great, also great asset for CSAL, and providing great flexibility and control of the operation of CSAL and increased support for extension. Now, just to mention about the CSAL versions that are currently available, the latest versions. The latest, there are actually two streams, as you could see. There's a stable stream, which is actually a code freeze stream from 2002, which is sort of frozen on version 4.3, and it's only been updated for bug fixes. At this point, it's on fix 12. So, the CSAL 4.3 is basically stable. It's very, there are very few bugs and works very well. And it's also available as an easy to install, you know, build system package with configure and it's sort of very easy to install and very easy to set up for any system. This provides an API and library so that you actually can use the system to embed in other applications. So, but the API compared to the new API for CSAL 5 is rather limited. And it provides support for plugging of codes and is quite reliable. Now, CSAL 5 is the new generation CSAL, which is a pre-release version that's available from CVS. It's now using a different build system, which is using SCOMS. There's a big restructuring of the code, and probably John will discuss this, the restructuring, later on in his talk, so I'll leave that for him to discuss. And one of the most important aspects of it is that it has an expanded API. It's using external libraries for sound file, which is soundfile.lib, for MIDI, for sport MIDI, for RT audio, sport audio, and also there are plugins available, and also in the Jack RT audio plugins. So there's also support for the development of plugin for output, real-time output plugins. And it's constantly evolving, and it's not completely tested, but in my experience, and that was discussed with Dave Phillips, his experience as well is very useful in Linux, and so in Linux it's probably the platform where it's mostly stable, and I would say at this point it's quite it's something that you can rely on it quite a lot, not completely tested but very useful. Okay, so I want to discuss now the ideas of extending CSAL from the language itself, from the user-defined code to the plugin of code. But before I do that, I just want to discuss just a few important details on CSAL. The first thing that I would say is that CSAL relies on a system, the CSAL language relies on a system that where you have three basic data types, and there's a third type of the two other types for CSAL for frequency domain processing, but we'll discuss that one of them later on. But the basic types are, you have I-type variables which are used in initialization only, and that they assume only one variable performance. There are K variables which are control rate signals, scalars assuming holding a single circle during performance, and A-type variables or ultra rate signals, vectors that hold a block of samples. So it's very important to understand this system when you're actually developing an opcode, so you can you know actually what's actually going to happen once your code is running. And also there's built in into a CSUN instrument code, there is a performance loop which you don't see, it's not explicit, but it's implicit in the code, which operates at the control rate, which is the KR, which is the ratio of the sampling rate by the number of samples in the block. Okay. Now, this performance loop, basically, during performance in this loop, you have K variables updated every 1/kr seconds, and order rate variables that will have the whole vector updated at that rate. So a single variable within the vector then is updated at the sampling rate. That's it. This is just a simple example to show what I mean by this. Is a simple CSUN code showing what I mean by this implied performance loop. So here you have defined between the instrument one and engine is the instrument code, and here you can think of this as the start of the loop, and that's what you can think of that as the end of the loop. Within this implied loop, you have the variables that are assuming one variable from performance. So, for instance, ice call is going to be 0.5 hours, so it's not going to be affected by the loop, it's not going to be in the loop. Whereas K run is going to be assuming several values in the loop. I'm incremented K run once every time you go around this loop. And the other variable that I'm using there is the A type variables, AC there. It's copied. This is actually being. Okay. This AC in there, this is also being implemented, being updated every time you go around the loop. So you're copying a block of samples every time the loop goes around, and then say I can update that by say multiplying by pi scale and k run, and this is basically scaling every sample in that vector by these variables here, and I'm copying the samples to the output here. So you can see the implied loop here is that some variables are updated in this loop, others aren't. Some variables are holding only one value in the loop, and some variables are holding whole vector. So now we can go for other examples. I'm going to do all the examples using a very, very simple processing operation here, which in which we see in three forms. Form as a UGO, as a user defined code, as a plugin of code in the time domain, as a plugin of code, not the whole, in the spectral domain, and this basically new generator is going to be implementing a very stupid filter, the first order feed forward, which is kind of the equation there, and this is the flow chart here, very simple, and this is the amplitude response of the filter, and that's kind of the spectral curve that you obtain with that. So we're going to see how we can, when we implement that as a UGO, as a time domain, in the time domain application, as I'm plugging a code, we're going to be implementing that flow chart. And when we do in the time domain, spectral domain, we're going to be using this amplitude response here as, to process the signal. So let's talk about user-defined codes now. User-defined codes is a good way of extending the system if you're not a C programmer or a C++ programmer yourself, but you know quite a lot of the CSUN language, and you want to write the code in CSUN, in the CSUN language. So you can create a node code that behaves exactly like any other code, and you can basically have any number of instances of that code in an instrument, in several instruments. And so it's effectively a node code like, just like any other, as far as the instrument code is concerned. It has a similar definition to the instrument code. So you have of code and then envelope, and you define the code inside there. You give it a name there, and you give some arguments that to it. The A type argument means that you're producing a signal, so a vector, an output. And these are the input arguments, A type, K type is the scalar, and I type, A. Now, these inputs and outputs to an opcode are accessed using the X-in and X-out opcodes, which are special codes for use with the unifying code. And also, a great thing about this, is that one, you can set a local value for a ksum, so you actually can have a vector of one sample, which means that you can have one sample delays inside your code. So if you want, for instance, you need a feedback of one sample, you can have it, which you can receive some, but you have to set the global ksums for one, and that performance-wise is not a great thing. So it's a good thing. Another thing that I'm not really discussing today, but it's also a great thing, is that you can have a recursive call of this of codes. So for instance, you can, in a very compact code, build a bunch of filters, a bunch of oscillators, etc. Something that you couldn't previously do in C#. So let's see the example of the feedforward filter that we just seen. The feedforward filter is very simple here. So I'm defining the values for high pass, low pass, so you can use this in the code there. So this opcode will take as arguments the input signal, K control, which will be a coefficient for the filter, and an I, which will be the mode of the filter, either low pass or high pass. So you set ksums to 1, so you can have effectively your loop here that's defined inside the code is actually just a one time, just running in one time. So actually, your vector size here is 1. So you don't have a. Effectively, what's happening there is that the k variables and the a variables will hold one samples. So you can define just the one sample delay if you want. Here's what's happening there. I get inputs using the X-in code. I'm going to initialize the delay to variable 2,0, and that will hold your delay signal. So then I'm checking whether this is high pass or low pass, and if it's high pass, then you just invert the coefficient. Just get the negative coefficient here, and invert the signal, and then the filter here is defined by that equation there, and I'm keeping the input signal in the delay there. So this is basically very. You can see that you can define this, and then you can use it in your orchestra. In any instrument with this code call, this would be your code code that you need to use, the C# code that you need to use this for the UDO. So it's quite simple and it's quite useful for lots of things. Now, UDOs can do only so much, and also in terms of computation, they wouldn't be as efficient as something that is actually written in C and compiled. So the mechanism of plugin of codes comes into to play when you want to write a code and load it and build it into a library and load it into C#. So C# basically provides this mechanism here that can be used for loading the plugin of codes as dynamic libraries, either written in C or in C++. Now, both C# 4.23 and 5 support this feature. Although the C code itself is not completely compatible between versions, so we're going to see in the examples the differences. The CSAM plugins, of course, will be basically just similar to the old kind of internal codes that before you had to compile with the language. If you wanted to add a new code, you had to recompile the whole program with the new code. Now, it's pretty much the same thing, except that you're going to have a number of extra things, which are the registration and an entry point that you need for the library. So you need to define the data space, the system, and then you have to supply your initialization control rate and or auto rate functions that will implement the signal processing. The OS3 array used to live in a static array inside CSound in the entry1 and entry2.c files. But of course you can't do that. So you have to define your local entry here, and that's going to be then registered the opcode with CSound by one of the entry point functions. Okay, so let's have a look at the building this building your code, what you need to do. Well, in terms of data space, basically the format of the data space is this. It's quite a simple format actually. You have an OPDS data structure which holds the common mode components of all codes. You have then following that you're going to have the input, the output and input which are going to be coming in the form of pointers to myfloat, which is the internal representation for signals in CSound. That can be either 32-bit floating point or 64-bit floating point, depending on the version of CSound that you're going to be compiling for. Because you can compile CSound for 32-bit form support, 64-bit support. So both the output and input are going to be pointed to myfloat. And then you can define any other internal data space member that you need. In our case, then you have this OPDS there. You can see the output. This is the input. This is going to be coefficient. Now I'm using the name K coefficient. Just don't really need to this name, but as you know, they're arbitrary. Just remind me that it's a K and that's an I type variable. It doesn't really matter. This is the an internal delay, what you call the one sample delay, and this is going to be the mode of the filter. This is an example of an initialization function here, and this is called every time there's an init pass in the ORS. So every time you initialize the instrument before performance, this is called. So it's basically where you define where, for instance, you're going to initialize everything, and you're going to be copying the I-time arguments as well, because they only going to assume one value. So you copy them there to your internal data space. Now, the differences between CSound 5 and CSound 423 are basically that you can see that in CSound 423, you only take the new filter, or basically just the data space point. You don't take the environment data space, the pointer to the environment data space, and you don't return any, you return void, and it's in CSound 5 and you have to return an integer, okay, and take that the environment data space as inputs, okay. Now I'm going to set up a larger rate function to process the audio here. So this basically produces a vector of samples as the output, and also takes a sample block as input. The size of the vector is taken from k samples. So this is the function here. This is going to be called every time in the instrument in the instrument loop. Every time the opcode is going to be active, it's going to be producing an output. This is going to be called. And so basically, what's important here is that you define a loop here to process the vector that you get as input. So the vector is coming here. This is your input. That's your output. These are your coefficient, which is only it's a single variable. Okay, so it's only it's a scalar, so a single value. And then that's your delay, and that's your temporary temporary part of using Psaki. So this is defined. This basically takes in the input here and produces an output. And you hold on to the delay here for the next time the processing is complete, the function is going to be called. The difference between Csound 5 and Csound 423, very simple here. Again, you in Csound 5 you return a variable, whereas in Csound 4.23 you don't return anything. It's the void there. And you take the environmental data space pointer in Csound 5, and you don't do that in Csound 4.23. Oh, there's another very important thing. Is that ksums now resides in Csound 5 resides inside the environmental data space, whereas in 4.23 it was a global variable. Okay. Of course, registration. Now this is what you need to do to make sure that Csound knows that there's no new code that can be used. And this is basically by filling up an entry in this structure here. Takes in basically the opcode name as a string, takes the size of the data space, and then it takes a code that basically defines what your code is going to be doing, which is a combination of a number of values. So for instance, if you have an initialization function and an object function, though, then you sum the two and you get five there. Right, that's easy enough. If you have a control function, then an initialization function, you get 3. And if you have initialization function, control function, and an object function, you get 7. So that's basically that. Then Csound helps you how this so-called supposed to behave. Now this is basically arguments, input, the output argument, and the input arguments here, just like in the form of the. That you saw with EGOs as well. And this is the initialization function, the pointer to initialization function. This is the control rate function. We don't have any, so we just pass a null pointer. And this is the processing function. Now, you have to provide the entry points, and in Csound 5 this comes in the form of the linkage macro, which is defined in the header file CSDL, or the entry point functions that you have to define to just copy these things. Same code, always the same. So this is for 4.23. Okay. Now, building and using the plugin of codes. Plugin of codes then can be built using the following commands. Basically, you just compile it and just build it as a shared library, okay, and export symbols there. In fact, the only thing is just ignore all warnings about redefinitions here, because you have to actually define a token there for not to get those warnings, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect the output code, the output binary code. So Csound 5 then will load up matching all codes in the opcode tier directly. So if you put your opcode so there in your opcode tier, then Csound 5 will load automatically that. Otherwise, you can do in Csound 4.23, there isn't such a code, so you have to load it automatically, or you have to load it manually and use this command line. And you can use that as well in Csound 5 if it's not in opcode to you. Another thing that you can do, another type of plugin that you can do in Csound is a plugin function table. Now, in Csound, function tables are very important because they're used everywhere for various functions. So the plugin function table generators are kind of handy, because then you can define your own as a module, so that can be loaded into Csound. So basically, it works a little bit like the opcode. You define a function to implement the gen routine, which is the generating and filling the function table. And this is the example by John Fitch that he did for when he introduced this feature into the language. And basically what this does is basically creates a hyperbolic tangent function table. Okay, so you can fill in the function table with a hyperbolic tangent with the basic the range or the range value here that is taken from the function table the F statement in the score or in the orchestra using using the appropriate bolt. So you can do that in C sound, so it's quite good. Plugin gen also has to be registered, and to that use the NFGen's structure there. This is the name of the function table. This is basically the function that implements it. And it has to be a node terminated array, because the way the system works, that gens are numbered by their loading order, and then it's starting at the moment, starting from 44. The gen 43 is the highest number internal gen. And then you use the F linkage macro to provide entry point to the dynamic loading order. Now, this is a very new feature, and it's only in CSUM 5. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about spectral processing, which is a topic that hasn't been covered very much in the available literature about sound of codes, the development of sound of codes. Because it's also a new feature that was introduced by Richard Dobson a couple of years ago again, and it's present in 4.23 and also present on 5, so you can use those with both version of CSound. So CSound is providing our framework for spectral processing, and that's based on the fourth data type, F6. The F6 define a self-describing frequency domain data type, which is described by this C data structure. Basically, it has a number of members here that relate to the data type. So things like the size of the spectral array, spectral frame, number of overlaps, window size, type of window, the format that data is present. At the moment, we're only using amplitude frequency, but this can be used for other, you can have other forms. You can have a complex form as well if you want. But then you have to make sure that your opcodes work that way as well. This is a count frame count that you need for the system to work, for the framework to work. And this is the actual data. This is a spectral sum, basically, spectral samples, and they are 32-bit floats, and they're held in this array here. The AUSCH structure basically holds memory blocks that you can use for CSound processing. So how do they work? Spectral codes work by you have a number of spectral analysis of codes such as PVS and now. Well, actually, there's only one at the moment, but there'll be more in the future. That will output the frames of FFT size plus two values. And every hop size input sum. So you have a set hop size, and you will just have that kind of data there. Then the frames will contain pairs of amplitude and frequency values for each DFT being from 0 Hz to 9 Hz frequency inclusive. The spectral processors will take these F6, process them, and output them on demand. So processing happens on demand, only as new frames are ready to be processed. So this is a difference from the old Facebook order implementations in CSound that will be producing them constantly and they weren't as efficient as this one here, this framework. So basically, what you implemented here is a k-rate processing function, because it doesn't really need to be called for an order rate in the order rate. You're not processing order rate signals. You're actually processing the factory control rate signals. You're not producing data at the order rate. You're producing data at a different rate. The only thing is that with that is that the FC framework requires that the hop size between analyze frames is bigger or equal to the k sums. Okay. It can't be smart. Okay. Yeah. I'm finished. So this is the flowchart of what's happening there, and you go through the PBS and now spectral propose the PBS and you get the waveform. So this is where processing can occur. That's the example. It's basically the same thing. You have to define a data space. You create an onboard in the same way, and the data space will have your inputs as PBS that. Pointers. So the only thing with this is that you're going to have to allocate your outputs, because you have to allocate the frame data for the output. So the initialization will allocate memory here, and to allocate memory you use the AUSALOC function, which in C sound 4.2 should be AUSALOC. Okay. And then this is the processing function. So what you do here, the clever bit is here, that if the last frame, if there's a new frame to be processed, so the frame count is different there, then you process the data, and this is a processing spectral domain. So you update the spectral frame, and then here what I'm doing is this the even numbers, even array positions are going to be the amplitudes, and the odd is going to be the frequencies. So I'm updating the frequency, the amplitudes only, because it's only filtering here, I'm not doing anything with the frequencies. And then you register it as a control rate function here, and you see you're using three, because you have an init function. And control rate function here, and the data type is F. Okay, C sound that is kind of regarded as kind of one of the most complete computer music languages. And all these things then are a very interesting mechanism that can be used then to expand the language. And there are other ones coming online now with C sound 5, which is new methods providing simple and quick way. Quick ways for customizing C sound, and I expect this is only the kind of only the start of new phase of evolution of C sound, and it's very interesting to see the language evolving and adding new things to it and providing more flexibility to its users. So just before I finish, I'm just going to show the the upcoding operation. You're not much of a this is okay. Not much of an effect, but it's just a filtering white noise. Here is low pass filtering, high pass filtering, etc. And this is implemented in the time domain and the spectral domain. This is the spectral domain one now, which is the same as all. So the same thing happening in the spectral domain. Okay, we'll see, we'll do some more demos showing these interfaces and things later on. Thank you very much.
Any questions from the audience? Oh, yes, that's something I've seen before.
Stefan Kassel from Germany. I just wondered how easy it would be to integrate new spectral data types into CSAMO, new data types which have a different sampling rate and block length, like the F6 signal. Would it be...
What type of new spectral data types do you mean?
For example, LPC frames or...
Oh yeah, I mean you have... that wouldn't be... That would be not really spectral, be time domain. It's a different... that wouldn't work in the same... This, the spectral processing is kind of the Fourier transform based data. You can can produce, if you produce the data in that format, the DFT format, then you can resynthesize it.
What I mean is how easy it would be to introduce entirely new data types. So it's not an ad hoc integration of the
Sorry, John Pitch, UK. The answer is it's not very difficult. The guy who did the spectral stuff did it very quickly, and it's on my list to make it even cleaner and smoother, and I'll talk about that later today.
You can, for instance, you can have that data that we, at the moment, we process the data in the format, in the object frequency format, but you can effectively have it in imagine format, in complex format, or in amplitude phase format. And which is something that I'm working on is have kind of a set of sinusoids, say sinusoid data with amplitude frequency and phase, and that we could be processing. So it's kind of expandable, as John said.
Just Just one job question. Is there any special debugging aid with all those C pointers and type counts and stuff?
John probably will be able to.
I'm really not the person to ask this. I wish to use brain power. Actually,
the printer.
I don't mind to say this, but the last copy I had in my department was discussing precisely this issue.
Yeah, no, what you have is that there is a, what we can call a no-code API, which that there error message to print out things, and there are a number of kind of auxiliary functions that you can call, like also the function is the only one I used here. They are all in the CSAM environment data space, and so you can use them. And for instance, there is one called perf error, which is whenever there's a performance error, you just print that out to the screen. There's a one called init error, when there's an initialization error, you print that to the screen. So these things, the only thing that these things require now is to have a good documentation of these functions, but they're out there.
Hello. My name is Jan-Jakob Hofmann from Germany. And my question is, what is the difference and the advantage regarding the user-defined opcodes to the macros we've had before?
The difference, there's a big difference because you, it's different in terms of concept really, because what you're doing with user-defined opcodes is actually defining, if you talk in object-oriented terms, defining a class that you can use, I mean, instances of it, and you're doing composition, you're composing that class with other classes. And so it's a completely different approach. Plus, you can have, can run the, as I said, the UTO at a different control rate, which is, it's very important, so you can realize all types of filters with it. And also, you can do, with something that I didn't discuss here because of the time, is you can do recursion, which is great as well, because you can then effectively spawn number of opcodes dynamically just by doing the recursion. So for instance, if you want to do a channel vocoder, you can just have your one channel defined and then recurse it, do a recursiveness, do a recursion, and sort of have your channel cutter band, filter banks all set up, So it's very compact. So there's quite a lot of new things that can be done with it.
Thank you.
I'm must say that just before the setup, there's one last slide here. That
the monitor.
Oh yeah. So one last slide. It's just about the updated text, because originally when I sent this code in, it had a the opcode code that is in the proceedings. Has a code that's not compatible with C5 anymore. So because things have changed quite quickly, and I have updated this about 4 or 5 times, and so the only way of getting the latest things is now, because I keep uploading, and next week there's someone that changes the interface, and so that's happened lots of times, and you can find it in that website, and you can find the C5.com site, the same text that you have in the proceedings, but with the updated code. So don't blame if the code doesn't work.
Okay, so I'm afraid we have to cut down on questions now because we're running slightly late. For now, I think that's enough. Thank you very much, Victor. And then we'll have roughly 10 minutes break for the next speaker, and we start at almost 2:30 with Dr. Albert Kreff.